Okay, today, September the 8th, is 5:52, and it is the instruction personnel policy student committee meeting. Tony, would you please call roll, please?
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Here.
Mrs. Cáceres?
Here.
Mrs. Charles?
Here.
And the first agenda item, please.
Discussion and formulation of recommendation to the Board of Trustees regarding district athletic coordinator position, Dr. Murphy.
Chairman Gonzalez, board members, good evening. The first item is the paper-clipped handout that was out of your chair regarding the whole issue regarding athletic leadership here in KMTU ISD. I was directed by the board in the first part of August to work with administration to come up with some guidelines and a regulation. The white handout is the current job description. This is the job description of district athletic coordinator, and this position is held by Coach Scott Brooks, Mr. Brooks, at the high school. And he does qualify for the position, and he holds all of these. And you'll notice that a lot of the items that are in here, as you go through it, are the specific items that you wanted to emphasize. That there would be a central command, a central lead of athletics, that the person serving as the district athletic coordinator would be able to have influence at the middle schools, all of those things. And those are all currently in the job description. So I was kind of scratching my head because, well, we've got it, because initially when you guys told me about this, I didn't think we had it. So I went and I interviewed and spoke with Coach Brooks, and he was aware that a lot of these things were in the job description. But he just didn't feel like there was any teeth and that he really had a lot of influence over specific things. He said he had influence over some things, but not over the entire program. So what we as an administration are recommending, and again on your desires, was on the blue sheets behind is the creation of a regulation that would put more teeth, not only in the job description, but in policy/regulation, regarding athletic program management and delineating the specific authority of the athletic program to the athletic coordinator, not only in job description, but also in policy. And so it goes through some of the more specific things I'd like to point out on this. And this, of course, will be in the Friday packet, and it'll come back on Tuesday for, like, first reading. If you'll turn the page and go to page two, two of the main things that you guys were talking about were the alignment and the scheduling. The district values close alignment of athletic programs at all grade levels. As such, the district athletic coordinator will ensure athletic alignment in each sport between middle school and high school programs. The district athletic coordinator has authority regarding alignment matters in this task with ensuring coordination. And then the other one, scheduling. The district values athletic scheduling that allows and ensures a competitive, community-oriented, and cost-effective athletic program. The district athletic coordinator will assist and oversee and has authority over scheduling matters. One of the things that I did speak to Coach about, who was very concerned, was the middle school football and basketball schedules. We play Tornillo. We travel to Tornillo, and we kill Tornillo every time we play them. 50-7 basketball scores, 40-6, and we travel all the way out there to do it. And he would rather we stay closer to home and find more competitive games. He would not be averse to driving to KMTU if it was a close matchup, but it isn't. And yet we have that on our schedule to use that as an example. And yet right here we have schools like Lincoln and Ornato, that we wind up playing in high school, we wind up playing Coronado every year, but yet we don't play their feeder schools. So these types of things he was very interested in working on. So I offer this, and I'll take any questions, and our feeling is that if it's okay, we would bring it back on Tuesday as a first read.
If this is a regulation,
yes.
Does it have to come to the
No, board? That's true, and I bet Martha Cross was back there gritting her teeth. To be honest with you, what I'm doing is I'm responding to your desires. You asked me in closed session, actually, when you were looking at my my personal contract and looking at the leadership of the district to work to garner more central and strong leadership of athletics. And this is where we're at. So you're right. I apologize. I probably wouldn't bring it back as a reading, but I would bring it back for the whole board to look at.
Will he have any teaching position, or just this will
his,
be?
His job will not change. His pay will not change. For, again, he is the district athletic coordinator. He already holds this job.
Okay.
We're simply adding a regulation that gives some substance to his job description.
Does he get any more money?
Nope.
Okay, so it's
just a regulation that allows, gives some policy wording behind it.
Dr. Murphy, is there a reason, I noticed, okay, the title's district athletic coordinator, is there a reason why he's on the teacher pay scale instead of the professional pay scale?
He's on the teacher pay scale, plus he has extra days. So that's where he gets a little bit more compensation.
But is there a reason for that?
No, there's not really a reason. I know that our current person in that role is much more of a teacher as far as his certification and his degrees. He doesn't hold an administrative certification or anything like that. And you don't have to hold this position. It's much more of a teacher role with this stipend of having the athletic coordinator on top of that.
Okay. My second question is, you indicated that he stated that he didn't feel there was, he wanted to put more teeth in it.
Yeah.
How are you going to go about disseminating this information so everybody's on the same?
Excellent question. After I bring it to the entire board, if everybody's happy with it, and Ms. Mendoza, you're exactly right, it's a regulation, not a policy. But after sharing it with the board and everybody getting on board with it, there would be a staff development aspect to it. We would get all the coaches together, we'd get the principals in there, and we'd all get on the same page. And basically, there would have to be a communication to the middle schools that basically we're going to start enforcing the job description at a much more stronger level, and we're writing a regulation to go along with it.
Okay, that's all. Thank you.
Any more questions? I have a question. We have two at each middle school. What is their positions? What are their positions at the middle schools? What is it called?
I don't know. We have to.
Ms. Carrasco.
What is the question?
What is there? We have two. Is it athletic director, athletic coordinators, or what is it called?
We have two athletic trainers. Sharon Norris and John Hudson. John Hudson also serves as the athletic coordinator for middle school. So he receives two stipends, one for the trainer and one for the coordinator.
Okay. My question is this going to affect at any given point their salary or?
No. As it stands currently, again, Mr. Brooks already holds this position. He already gets the pay for this position, and there's no request to the board to change that in any way.
I understand that, but is it going to affect the other two staff members eventually?
No. What the regulation lays out is that the middle school athletic department programs are answerable to the district athletic coordinator position, and it just basically states that in a stronger way.
Okay.
So no, it won't change salaries.
Okay. So does my committee agree with recommending this to the full board then? Okay.
Sure.
And if any of you over the weekend have comments or a sentence you like or don't like or you want to add, just let me know. Let me know by tomorrow afternoon so I can get in the Friday packet, and we'll get this to the whole board. And we'll have this as a short agenda item with questions, and then we'll go forward from there after Tuesday.
Okay. Next agenda item.
Discussion and formulation of recommendation to the Board of Trustees regarding student code of conduct. Ms. Gonzalez.
Madam Chair, Vicky Gonzalez, and members of the board, Every 2 years, the code of conduct needs to be adopted by the school board of trustees. It will move to adoption on September the 13th. And we're here to discuss some of the revisions and changes and seek some of your recommendations. The principals have already submitted their recommendations, so we'll go through the PowerPoint to explain that. You have received an updated revision chart. I made a few mistakes, so we had to revise it, and you can see the PowerPoint that I'm about to go through.
Sylvia, do you have a clicker?
I do.
Okay, great.
Okay, the first one on your chart talks about the revocation of transfers. This is actually not new, but it does say that we have to be in compliance under FDA local
VSM. Mr. Gladys, can you come up to the microphone?
Well, she can get down.
So can you sit down and just turn and face, or what do you want to do? Or can you, you can take that microphone.
Yeah,
double click.
Okay, so we have the right to revoke the transfer of a non-resident student for violation of the district code of conduct, and we have to be in compliance with, it has to be in compliance with FDA local, and we are in compliance at this moment, because it's not really a new one, so it's not one we're doing. This one has to do with speaking or walking at graduation, and a student shall not be engaged in any serious misconduct in order to walk at graduation in either one of the semesters, so we know that they cannot do that. But now we find out that for seniors, their last day at DAEP is actually the last day that they're assigned to that placement. So we're wondering, should they be allowed to walk at graduation or not? And we got the recommendation from the principals. They feel that they may not be allowed to participate, especially because our DAEP serves for everything, not only for, it serves for serious offenses as well. So we have to look very carefully. So we are adding that it'll be specified in the DAEP placement order and or approved by the school principal at that time to make that decision. And Mrs. Field is working on the language for that. As we coincide with the EIC law. For dating violence, the district must include dating violence in the district improvement plan. And Margarita Hernandez has already done that, and she has to update the policy as well on dating violence. So she's in that process already. New language has been added to misuse of technology resources, as stated here. A student cannot send or possess electronic messages that are abusive, obscene, sexually oriented, including cyberbullying and sexting, either on or off school property. Nor can they use email to engage in or encourage illegal behavior or threaten school safety, including off school property, if the conduct causes a substantial disruption to the educational environment. And then Brigham is also working on that policy to update that. Coursework notice to parents for DAEP students. Parents must be provided, and students must know that they are able to work on all coursework in order to complete graduation. And they also have, in the notice to parents, it also has to state the methods in which the child will be allowed to complete graduation if he's placed in DAEP. So those notices have been revised by Pauline Leiden and the guidance of Jenny Hammock and myself. We've already verified that they have been updated. The length of placement in DAP, we have to have a way of testing students upon arrival on the first day of DAP and upon dismissal or their last day. We have to assess their what they have learned while they were there. So we have, we have never placed a student longer than 90 days. And this is, provision is only for students that we're going to place for 90 days. So that has never happened. But just in case, we're going to prepare, Janine's going to place it in her district improvement plan, and we're going to make sure the campus principals abide by that and know that if they ever do place a student more than 90 days, they have to have proper pre- and post-testing. Placement or mandatory expulsion for certain offenses. Aggravated robbery is listed as a felony under the Texas Penal Code and can be an expellable offense. However, in the history of Canutillo, we have never
place, we have not expelled the student for a very, very long time. So their principals are recommending mandatory placement in DAAP. I talked to Lynn Leighton, Mrs. Leighton, and she said that luckily they haven't had any serious placements there in the DAAP, so they're okay and we're hopeful, but in case they were very serious, they would have to probably go to court and then the judge would have to start their placement.
This is new language also. Breach of computer security was added as a permissible expellable offense if a student accesses district's computers, computer system, or computer network and knowingly alters or damages or deletes district property or information. And then Brigham is also working on that report. And if the principals may recommend expulsion or it may be mandatory expulsion depending on the seriousness of the offense on case-by-case basis. Offenses within 300 feet or at a school event, placement at DAP if less than a felony amount or expulsion. This is one on the side notes of TASB tells us that we need to also seek the advice of the school board of trustees for the following three offenses. And again, I don't think that our school district can make that decision because we don't expel students. But anyway, it's selling, giving, or delivering to another person, or possessing, using, or being under the influence of marijuana. Dangerous drug of conduct is not punishable as a felony. It's got to be under the amount that is punishable. Selling, giving, or delivering to another person, or possessing, using, or being under the influence of alcohol, or committing a serious act or offense while under the influence of alcohol, if the conduct is not punishable as a felony. Engaging in the conduct that contains the elements of an offense related to a visible volatile chemicals. And all these are under the felony amount. So the principals are recommending that it may be DAE placement. So I'd like to open it for discussion to see if you agree with that. If these three offenses, if they are under the felony amount, if they should be may result from DAE placement or should they be mandatory placement in DAE?
Through the chair, if I could just go one more in there. Basically, the question is, should the principal have the ability to be flexible regarding those offenses, regarding whether or not the child will go to DAP, or should it be a hard and fast rule that they have to go to DAP? That's kind of the question, correct?
Yes, so, that's correct.
Selling, well, let's see. So let's say a kid comes to school drunk, to use the term.
And if it's under the felony amount.
And it's under the felony amount. Of course, if a student came to school drunk, that would be under, that's not a felony.
Right.
Although parents probably sometimes want it to be. Should it be an automatic DAP, or should the principal have leeway? Same thing with if they came stoned on marijuana or another drug. Is it mandatory or is it something that the principal should have leeway? Volatile chemicals, that would be sniffing glue, sniffing paint, those types of things. Those things, should it be mandatory or should it be discretionary? And of course, if it's discretionary, it still very well might go to DAP, but it does give him a little.
Madam Chair, I don't feel that it should be mandatory. I think it ought to be a case by case. We have good kids. And, you know, kids make mistakes. That's why they're kids.
I agree. Leave it up to the discretion of the principal.
There is a middle ground. If it's mandatory, it never specifies how long. You literally could have a situation where it could be mandatory, but they go for one day.
Yeah, but then it's on your record.
True.
You know, and you don't. One beer shouldn't have to go with you all your life.
Let me go one more. If we say it's flexible, are we being soft on crime?
No.
We're being good with children.
Okay. I'll stop there.
McGrath?
Mrs. Rachel?
Well, I think it should be left up to the discretion of the principal because he knows the kids better than anybody else. Mm-hmm. every case is different.
We're going to leave it up to the administration, and hopefully they make the wise decision and they play favoritism.
So I'm hearing that in most of these cases, it will be what the principal recommends at his discretion. If he investigates the case and finds out it's severity, he can decide if it's mandatory or if it's a placement
Let me ask you a question, Dr. Murphy. What is administration, what would they like?
They're recommending they result in DAP placement.
They what?
They recommend that it may be
flexible.
Okay.
Although I will be honest with you, sometimes as a principal, you appreciate a policy that's firm, so you're not having to be wishy-washy. But I think in this case, the May is probably the best situation.
So I like May.
The current student code of conduct has all the literature, so I'm going to clean it up according to our discussion, and then we'll present it on September 3rd. Okay.
Perfect.
Any questions?
Thank you, Ms. Gonzalez.
Thank you.
We're going to, committee concurs, and we're going to recommend it to the board for
the next agenda item is discussion and formulation of recommendation to the Board of Trustees regarding Renaissance Learning for 12 days of job embedded professional development in Sierra.
If everyone could turn to the pink page, please.
Information on Renaissance Learning, I would like to share with you some information regarding the sales representative for Renaissance Learning, Mrs. Connie Bedock. Renaissance Learning has been in the district for over 10 years. The main product utilized by CSISD has been their Accelerated Reader Program, which has been in the district over 10 years. Further, CISD purchased additional curriculum products from Renaissance Learning in May of this year, 2011. These additional purchases were made after careful and thoughtful study and selection by a wide-ranging curriculum committee made up of all district principals and many other instructional leaders. Regarding Renaissance's vendor, the sales representative, Connie Vela, Mrs. Vela lives in Laguna Meadows within our school district boundary and has two children here in the district. She's a member of our community. Her husband is Jaime Vela, who served on CISD's Budget Stakeholders Committee in 2010 and for a short time was a treasurer for the Political Action Committee for a recent voluntary election program. Decision Conteo, 2011. Connie and Jaime are not related to any trustee nor the superintendent. In May of this year, when further products were considered and purchased from Renaissance Learning, these facts were fully disclosed to the Board of Trustees in open session prior to purchase, with the district's attorney fully commenting that he had carefully studied the matter and that there were no negative legal issues regarding the vendor and or the purchase of those products. Our new attorney for CISD, Steve Blanco, has also reviewed the situation and concludes that there is nothing inappropriate or out of order in considering and or purchasing products from Connie Vela and or Renaissance Learning. Reinforcing, please note that no board member, nor the superintendent, nor any other member of the Conteo ISD staff has benefited, received anything of value, or will benefit personally due to this situation, and that the district's past and current relationship with Renaissance Learning is nothing but positive and appropriate. In presenting to you this evening more possible products from Renaissance Learning, administration feels it important to reiterate this information and to have it included in the minutes of this meeting. Administration would also be happy to answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
And through the chair, I personally spoke to Steve Blanco twice about this during this week, and he has been made fully aware. He has reviewed it, and I spoke with him this afternoon. He's not here tonight, but he did confirm, and he actually viewed this letter and edited this letter. He had one small change, which we made. He is totally comfortable with it and approves it as well. Thank you.
Any questions?
I do. I have a few. Ms. Fierro, am I hearing from you that we are purchasing something additional from Renaissance?
We are purchasing 12 days of staff development, and then as school has started and more and further implementation has happened of the successful reader program, one of our campuses would like to buy another kit of successful reader, which is a book club format for mentoring their Mentoring Minds class. The 12 days of staff development would support the accelerated math program that we purchased, as well as the English in a Flash, and as well as any further support that campuses need for accelerated reader.
So we purchased a product back in March, if I recall properly.
May.
Okay. And this then is going to be a support system by means of staff training?
Yes, to ensure implementation. Okay. So that the staff developer that works with the company can go out and actually visit classrooms, work with teachers to make sure that they understand the software that goes with the program and understand how to read the data. And that's one of the things that campuses and teachers have been asking, is staff development to follow the technology that they receive. So we want to bring them in October to... by then, teachers will have had an opportunity to try and work with it and have questions, and then we can make sure that.
And have we evaluated this program? We've had it for 10 years in the district. Have we had it here for 10 years because it's just comfortable and everybody, oh, yeah, keep having that along? Or is it because it's an excellent program and we're getting something, we're being fed from it?
Well, Accelerated Reader, I haven't received any feedback. And once you purchase, for example, Accelerated Reader, the cost to continue is minimal. I believe like 99 cents a student to continue. It's the initial cost that you invest in the books and initially you do that. And one of the things I did have a request from was that they receive more staff development or staff development on it again, on the Accelerated Reader to kind of revive the new teachers come in and the new teacher staff develop on it. The Accelerated Reader works well with the English in a Flash and the Successful Reader because 90% of vocabulary in English in a Flash is found in those books. So then if the students spend 10 to 15, especially our ELs, spend 10 to 15 minutes a day with English in a Flash, they learn the vocabulary, then their reading will increase, their reading will improve, their fluency, their comprehension.
I understand, but I mean, we've had it in the district since my boys were in grade school. They've got master's degrees now, it's a long time ago.
Right.
Obviously, what I'm asking is we're happy, we see, we're getting something for our money. It's a very high dollar product. Are our test results showing that this is worth our money?
I believe so. I think we have reached a point where we're a little bit stagnant. And so we do need to revive it and make sure that, which is why they want to use it more during the Mentoring Minds classes now in middle school.
Okay.
With the Successful Reader, which ties to the Accelerated Reader, and the STAR, which is the reading assessment that will show growth.
And so we are expected then to see next year this time where the money we've put out, which has been high dollar, it's a lot of money, is we're gonna all going to be sitting here, God, they really learned a lot this year. This program worked.
And it will be one of the components.
Okay.
That, you know, it's, one
so we will see an evaluation of the program of how wonderful our well-spent
yes.
our money was.
We can see it through usage.
Okay.
We can see it through growth in student reading, through the STAR data analysis that it comes with. So we can certainly evaluate it that way.
Through the chair, I think it's important to point out that there are several Renaissance products. It's not just Accelerated Reader.
There's also Accelerated Math, which is something that we're starting this year. We're starting with 100 licenses per campus right now. And
and that is not stagnant. That is, everybody's really geared up for that. It's more the Accelerated Reader, which has been here so long.
Yeah, the accelerated math is brand new.
Okay.
And so we're, you know, we're still making sure that it's, we're in the getting it functioning completely stage right now. And but this, the feedback from the summer school is very positive because the students get instant feedback, the teachers get instant feedback, and especially the elementary, the sooner we close those gaps, the better. So just intervention programs that we have in the tier two products for math and for reading.
Thank you, Ms. Field.
Any other questions? Okay. Does my committee then feel comfortable recommending it to the board then? Okay. Thank you. Tony, next agenda item, please.
Item D, discussion and formulation of recommendation to the Board of Trustees regarding Hagen Cooperative Learning, Ms. Pierre.
And Board, thank you for listening to the pink page that we read, and we will need to read that one more time at the board meeting on Tuesday.
Thank you. Do we think we're in trouble?
No, we're just covering our bases. I think we'll have, after we do it on Tuesday, we'll have done it in two separate times, and I think we'll be done with it, but I definitely want to do it at the board meeting.
So. Okay.
Yes. The Kagan Cooperative Learning Materials, in the summer we had two successful Kagan Summer Academies, a three-day math academy and a two-day science academy. The teachers left very excited about school starting, new strategies, new structures in their back pocket. We had another one today, and it went very well, and teachers were very excited to go. What we did at that training is we passed around a wish list. Kagan has other products that will help with classroom management, spinners, more books that have more strategies. They wanted some for balanced literacy. So we passed around a wish list, and basically what we're doing is we're purchasing more items for them to be able to implement in their classroom. Because the training was fresh, they saw more things that they learned about in the training. So we asked them, you know, if we can, what would you like for us to get more for you to help with your classroom management? And it was a list of different things that they wanted to implement in their classroom after the training. Some of them are the We Science, the question books, which is the questioning students, which we want them to go there with the start coming.
So essentially you have like a training and they have a table of you could get this afterwards and add to your little collection, and this is what everybody wanted.
Yes.
Okay.
These were the things that they asked for their classroom.
Are these are they like consumables? Are they like classroom sets? What are they?
They're not consumables. What they are is, for example, Silly Sports and Goofy Games. It's a teacher book that gives ideas for teachers to implement in their classroom to bring kids alive. The Balanced Literacy helps them with their English language arts, different structures that they can use. So it's a teacher book. There are pages that they can run copies of if they need to, but it's for the teacher and it's something that they will have in their classroom. Fan and pick mats are just some cards for students that will help them interact with each other in a group. And it's just a structured way. I remember I mentioned to you earlier, I walked into a classroom and there was about 25 students in a classroom and the teacher was helping one student and the others were just waiting. And these are ways where students can work in structured ways in groups. They can help each other and the teacher is monitoring and facilitating the groups rather than just spending time with the one student.
Ms. Quintana?
Ms. Vera.
Yes.
I see that the amounts that are being purchased and stuff. How and who gets this?
The teachers that went to the training get it. Because they know what to do with it at this point. Now,
how about the teachers that didn't go?
One, that they're asking for another academy, which I'm hoping to put up next summer. Secondly, one of the things that I asked them to do is to take back these structures and these strategies to their PLCs. So they can take these books back and they can say, you know, I'd really like to use this strategy during this lesson. Invite other teachers to come watch them, go coach them through it, teach them during the PLC, let them go try it. So it's really a book for their PLC that they're taking back for other teachers. But we've already staff developed all of the secondary teachers. In the summer, it was about 60 teachers. Today, we had about 47, including some principals and instructional coordinators. They keep asking for more, which is what I wanted. Rather than ask for it and then beg to attend, then we just set up stuff, and then maybe they'll show up, maybe they won't. And that's why I wanted to buy these items for the teachers who wanted them, who know what to do with them, who will use them, and will share the information, instead of just buying a blanket and then it'll sit on shelves. I wanted them to get training on them first to know what to do with them. But now the word is spreading.
Yeah, I would like to see all of the teachers.
Yes.
Yes, not just some of them.
Right. And we're working on that throughout the year.
Ms. Fierro, the teachers that attended this, it was all levels? Elementary, secondary?
In the summer, it was elementary because last year, all of the secondary teachers received CAGN training on cooperative learning.
So these materials are essentially being purchased for elementary teachers?
Yes.
Okay.
If you look at the grade levels, it's all elementary.
Yeah.
We had purchased last year books for secondary.
Ms. Fierro,
yes.
Are you done, Ms. Scott?
Uh-huh. Thank you.
You mentioned that these are only for elementary, but...
this particular purchase.
Right.
Yes.
And only for teachers that attended your training. What about the walkthroughs, and they're not all teaching the same subject? How is this going to affect their evaluation and...
Yeah, this is a beginning that hopefully they'll take back, but this isn't content as much as it is structures. For example, even if we did walkthroughs now and there was one teacher lecturing and there was another teacher that had students in groups, that's the how, and that's what we don't tell them. We provide the training, the resources, and then they can choose, today am I going to put my students in rows or am I going to do a CAGN structure today? But it's still the same content. So it's the how that we're giving them the training and the resources for the student engagement and how to have students speak, listen, write, and read the academic language. But the content is the curriculum. So it would be perfectly normal to do a walkthrough. See one teacher have their students work in groups and another teacher not have them on groups, another teacher have them at the computer. It's the curriculum that we really need them to stay pretty close together with.
Okay. And my other question is, what about those teachers that did not attend the training and one other teacher says, well, I have this book, and she starts sharing it with her? Can she train that other person?
And that's what we're hoping for.
And then do
and
we
then
have enough
more CAGN training and have more?
Okay.
Teachers.
And do we have enough funds to cover that of most other teachers?
Yes. The good news is that we're using Title II because it is teacher professional development. So we do have the funds to be able to do that. I'm planning on. We're hoping to be able to set up another academy in the summer.
Okay. All right.
Academies.
I have a question. Ms. Hill, this is the second year for CAGN in our district, or
good? This will be the second. Last year it was just secondary now.
And will we see a normal type of evaluation coming through to the board? I guess at the end of the year on this program?
Well, it's not really a program, it's
or
the structures.
Or how the teachers feel. Do you get input back from the teachers whether they're using it or not using it, or
I got feedback from the teachers after the training. I have a giant thank you note on my door from all the teachers I attended. I'll be so thrilled. I haven't talked to them recently or since school started to see if they have been utilizing it. I plan on doing some walkthroughs through just kind of letting them get used to their students first and then going out there and doing some walkthroughs and definitely hoping to see those structures happening in the classrooms.
Okay. So this is essentially a tool. This is a tool, and it'll be used. And we're in our second year. We had secondary school. Now we're having elementary school. They're going to get this new tool, and so everybody's going to be fixed up by next year this time.
And so,
what Ms. Mendoza is asking, you know, will we see an evaluation of some sort? That we spent a lot of money here.
Right.
And you know what? Everybody really hates this. And there's only two of them who like it. And there's always some ones who are saying they like it, but everybody else hates it.
Right.
And it sits on the shelf, as a matter of fact. Just that, you know, I don't think it's the money. Is it being used and utilized? Are teachers happy? And are they being made whole and their kids made whole by the purchase of it?
I understand.
Is that? Yeah.
And something that I will monitor as I do classroom walkthroughs.
Thank you. And if it's not, we can do something different. I mean,
absolutely.
Just because you started with one doesn't mean we have to, you know,
right,
live with it.
Okay. Yes. Do we agree then? Okay. Ms. Tony?
Yes.
Next agenda item.
Discussion and formulation of recommendations to the Board of Trustees regarding A+ Learning Online Interactive Credit Recovery Program.
Ms. Fierro, we're in a roll.
Okay, this is the program that we are using in the TLC lab and at Northwest also for students who are using the computer program to make up their work that needs more points to receive credit in a course. The PIA lead will that came out talked about mastery of objectives with the students and how students should be given an opportunity to make up work if they have not passed a course. And so this is a program that Jim Fry uses at the high school to help students recover lost credit. And also at the
college.
Okay,
I was reading in the description that it says 11 months for 110 concurrent users for 9 sites. Why 9 sites if they just use it at the high school and at Niches?
They're just
Northwest, sorry.
They're just telling us we can use it at any campus at any grade level.
It doesn't affect the price then, that you're paying on the user, not the site.
Not the site, like some companies do.
Chair, when I first arrived, this is for high school credit.
Mm-hmm.
When I first arrived, we actually had this at CMS, and we actually used a teacher unit, and it was not really worthwhile because the kids couldn't earn high school credit in the sense that it's supposed to be for remedial, it's not for original credit, certainly at the middle school. But A+ has been in the districts before my arrival, before Pam's arrival, and the high school principal in particular is very pleased with it. It factored into our excellent completion rate, graduation rate, helping kids get back on track, and we definitely want to move forward. Now, I see Mr. Gatlin here. We had a 30-day gap. What is that? Do we need to disclose that and mention that?
Well, the original cost of it's going to be over the bid amount. But what they were wanting to do, this was actually supposed to start September.
Sure.
Can you come up to the mic?
Yeah.
Come up to the podium, please.
This was actually supposed to start on September the 1st. What we did, we just allowed them to go ahead and purchase the first month, which was underneath the limit that we had presented to the board.
That's why we're bringing the rest of the school now. And that's exactly what we did last year as well. Exactly.
So is that why we see 72.6 and 79.2 for the difference in prices?
Exactly. And we did go out a bit on this 2 years ago on the war awarded the bid. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been competed.
That's a lot of money. We could hire a teacher for that much money. What is it doing for us that is so wonderful? And it can't be that much, or we wouldn't be going on the 16th of September to everyone's home to round them up. They would already have.
Last year, if you'll remember, in our goals wrap up in July, we recovered approximately 1,300 credits. Last year, if you'll remember that, we had that. The large majority of those credits came through the A-plus program in the TLC lab at the high school. And that's an amazing benefit to the high school. And they have multiple teachers. And these kids aren't just on their own in a computer lab doing stuff. We have multiple teaching units in there. We have aides in there. They're actually in two separate computer labs working through it. They chart the students. And I would love to take a tour with the board through our TLC lab so you can see the extensive effort that goes on. It's very coordinated, very organized, and it's very, very beneficial to our students.
And it's an alternative setting for them.
Does it limit us to 110 users? Is that,
if,
say, 112 wanted to
go? That one time.
That
one's
on
the computer.
Yeah. Which is plenty.
It's even a little buffer in there.
You'll remember that 2 years ago we did away with the GED program in Canyon TOISD because those kids are technically dropouts even if they're successful. We brought those students to the TLC lab at the high school, and I can't say how many, but I do know a percentage of those students wound up graduating from high school. Were able to garner the credits when they were looking just at GED through the A-plus program and the program that Mr. Fry has at the high school.
Do we have any other programs that do this?
In our district currently, no.
We didn't approve something in the spring?
No.
Usually a district chooses one vendor to deliver this type of the credit recovery program.
And this is
ours. El Paso ISD has a different one. Eastlada probably has it. Every district has something.
You may be thinking of the Achieve 3000, the reading program.
That's it.
That's what we do. That's not a credit recovery. That's an intervention.
Okay.
An acceleration program.
If we didn't have this, and how would students, would they have to pay to?
Right. There would be two options. If we didn't have the program, we could self-create the program, you know, like our math department. That would take more teachers, and they would have to create the curriculum and the remedial work. The other option would be that the kids would have to find another provider outside of Kenya Tio.
And if we did that, we'd be giving them the same thing that we've been giving them for the last 4 years. This is self-paced. There's someone there to help them when they need help. They can move at their own pace, and it's just a different setting now that we're trying for them, because the other way it wasn't working for them.
How many students do you expect to reach with this year?
Well, I know 1,300 credits spread over, the number was well over 100 students last year, well over, if not 150 students were in there and making up credit in some way, shape, or form.
So essentially we're spending about $7,000 a student to get them to get their credits they should have been getting anyhow, really.
To get our and to get our graduation rate up and to get our completion rate up. Having an intervention program like this is essential in today's AYP world and also in their 21st century learning environment where these kids have to get through to have any type of success in their young lives. And we really see it as a positive tool. This is not a program that sits in a closet. This is a significant piece of the program at our high school.
And like the number that he was talking about was seniors. We also want any student that has failed a course, keep them on cohort. So it's going to be more than 100.
Okay.
It's 110 at one time that can be on it. But
through the year, how many will we reach then?
I can get you that number. I can, based on last year's data, on sophomores that, you know, because freshmen struggle. We have, you know, that's their hardest year, some sophomores and their juniors, seniors. So I can get that number.
I would appreciate that.
You know, when you and I went to school, if you failed science with a 67, you went back and you took science again.
That's right.
Through programs like this, students can remediate quicker and wind up even higher, you know, get those points and get through the remediation without an entire year lost. And that's how you keep them on cohort. Because at the same time, you want the kids to, you know, be very strong in their curriculum, be very, very strong in their academics. You also have to balance that in that they have to stay on cohort, they have to get through. And here you have a nationally recognized program, the A-plus program, based on national standards and also tailored to Texas, that can take students through diagnostic exams to find where their weaknesses are in the TEKS, where their weaknesses are in the state standards. It has specially designed lessons regarding those weaknesses. The student has to take pre-test, post-test, and they can get through that material. A lot of times they wind up stronger in the curriculum than the kids that passed just the regular course and have forgotten about it.
What did we pay for it last year, Mr. Young?
I was going to say, to Ms. Vieira's credit, she actually looked at this. We talked about it earlier. That's one reason we didn't bring this to you earlier, is because we had to resubmit the proposal. There were some items on there that we felt we didn't need, and she worked at getting that proposal cut. But I think it was close to $15,000 more last year, if I remember correctly.
More?
I can get to that figure.
No, that's okay. That's wonderful.
Ms. Cáceres?
Ms. Vieira, do you know, I know you, Dr. Murphy mentioned this program came about before you all were on board, but do you know roughly when we switched to this program, how many years ago?
I think it was 2 years ago.
Two?
Right, when
I think this is our third year.
Yeah,
okay. So we went up to 10, so it was last year, so I guess we're going on 3 years.
I mean, since you've been on board, have you looked at other options? Is there something comparable to this? Or
I've been looking at them recently. There's something that I've been looking at, Alex. So next year when this is up for bid, we're definitely going to be working with the high schools.
Board, when we went to the National School Board Conference, if you'll remember, if you ever went down on the exhibit floor, every third booth was a credit recovery booth. This is a national movement. There are multiple players in it and vendors. A-plus is certainly not the only one, and we certainly could go out to bid and look at other programs. I can tell you they're all fairly expensive because they're custom software programs. But there are multiple vendors doing this work now.
Who's their representative?
Adela Flores. Just call her Adela.
I have a request. Dr. Martin, I'm sorry. Is it, Ms. Fiel, possibly, can we get a, not a list by students, but by grade level, how many credits were recovered by grade level?
Absolutely.
By tomorrow?
Yeah.
for the Friday
class? No, I'm just kidding.
But like,
we can get it in the Friday class.
How many actually were enrolled and how many actually had success?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You'll be amazed. It's quite a large number.
Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
Basically, and I see the kids from Anthony, they have the same thing.
A-plus?
Yes. Okay. And basically, it's up to them if they want to refer.
Individual.
They can get it, nail it, or some of them can just hang on all year and not do anything on it. You know, it's just, that's to be their self-determination for them to want to recover that credit. So it's good.
Ms. Quintana, that's an excellent point. One of the things that we have done, one of the problems with credit recovery is you're dealing with students that maybe not might not be the most organized or motivated students. And one model of credit recovery is it's available and the kids can drop in and make up their credit if they'd like to. Well, that's fraught with problems. What we do is we go through and we find where the credit needs to be recovered, and we come to the students and we have a serious heart-to-heart and we ask them to do it. In the end, it's not an absolute requirement, but we put it out there to the students in a much more robust manner than just having it available. And that has led to a lot of success.
Because I've seen some kids go a whole year and not do anything.
Right.
But it's, they have to go on their own time, they have to either before school, after school, during lunch, and some of them have the initiative and some of them just
I have another question. Can they do it from home or no?
No. I'm almost
certain. It's not web-based?
It is. It might be web-based, but I don't think it can be accessed.
It's not an option for them, so.
Yeah.
No, it's if somebody else can.
Right, exactly.
Okay. So,
I mean, again, we have teachers in the room, aides in the room, multiple adults
sure that
overseeing.
That they're going to have more.
Yeah.
Okay. Any more questions? Okay. Tony, recommended. Next agenda item.
Item F, discussion and formulation of recommendation to the Board of Trustees regarding Eduphoria for data analysis. Ms. Fierro.
Basically, we would like to continue the use of Eduphoria with the data analysis. I think it's been a great use to teachers. We're currently implementing common assessments this year, district-wide. In fact, I've been running those answer documents for them, so when they scan them, they can compare not only to each other in the PLC, the teachers in the same grade level, but also they can see how the other campuses are doing and then compare we can look at how the whole district is doing on those certain student expectations by students. We can catch students right away if they start falling behind, and we can target which student expectations that they're needing help with so we can intervene as soon as possible. It's been a great tool for the district. Whenever I receive a call from a parent, anybody asking a student, I just go on Eduphoria and I can see their whole history. If they've been in the district since third grade, their test scores are there since third grade. And I can look back to see what their history is. So we make a lot, face a lot of decisions.
This is also
yes, ma'am.
I noticed that you have this one down, and have we ever had this before? This Eduphoria suite.
Oh yes, that's right. That is the new part. What we were getting requests from the administrators is to have PDAS online, and so that is why we got the suite. It also has the fourth bar, which is the curriculum piece. And I'm not really interested in going there, but one of the things that Forethought does have is that it traces the data continuously. So every time you scan in a student's data all year, it tracks how they're doing on that student expectation all year. not just like the regular edge board where you see how they did on that one assessment. It's tracking their progress on certain students and teaching them.
And PDAS being the teacher evaluation
tool. The teacher evaluation tool that the principals can now do.
What I see, though, is, so we have had this Eduphoria before.
We had it last year.
The basic.
Uh-huh. And everybody was happy. Yes.
I believe so. I have not heard it. I've heard only good things.
And I notice, I don't mean to jump ahead, but I can't help but notice that our next agenda item is going to, we want everybody to have now an iPad so that they can do this. How did they do it last year without it?
They, the principals, when they were asking for the PDAS tool through Eduphoria, they also requested an iPad, which was their request. And I know there are different types of tablets, and they're very good. In the last day, pulling up which one would be better, a PC, tablet, or iPad.
Can we just stay on that agenda item first, and then?
But could they use this?
Yes.
Without anything else is really what might. We used it this year without anybody having an iPad.
Yes, absolutely.
So we could purchase this for the $15,350 and just move on down the road, and everybody could be
absolutely.
That's what I can say. Thank you.
Sorry, you jumped on to the other.
I started again.
Any other question? I have a question. What are we currently using for the evaluation on the DAS?
Just paper.
Paper.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to input it on the computer manually,
computer.
Type it in.
Yes. So they go to the classroom, they do their evaluation, they go back to the office, and they
but what program are we using? Because
PDAS.
I know that there's, so it is.
FileLink Pro.
I'm sorry?
FileLink Pro.
Still? Ew.
It is.
Ew.
Which brings us to our next item.
No, we cannot go there yet. You were the one that called my attention.
It's
FileLink Pro. It's the old program. It's a program that we've been using for years. We have, three or four licenses per campus, except for the high school, which we have more. Then we have a few here at Central Office, because it used to be, that's what you did. The campus and district improvement plan used to be on FileLink Pro too.
Okay.
So,
but if we purchase this option B, we could still use this suite without having to get an iPad, right? It's still, you can still log on using, you just can't. It's not convenient to carry it in your hand with you, correct?
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay. So, any more questions? Does the committee feel comfortable recommending?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now we, Ms. Tony, yes, now we can go to the next agenda.
And that would be item G, discussion and formulation of recommendation to the Board of Trustees regarding iPads for principals and assistants for walkthrough and evaluations.
Through the chair. If everyone just want to make reference of the buff colored sheet, there was a question at last night's item about the iPods, and there was some confusion, iPod, iPad, and all that. Ms. Brigham has put together a response for you, a warrant list response. Ms. Aguirre helped, and I appreciate that for your information.
Okay, this is not on the agenda.
Right.
Thank you.
Just bringing it to your attention.
Yes, and as you were saying, it is the iPad is a very convenient tool for them. Because
and expensive.
Yeah.
Been very expensive.
What else did everybody have? Used to have a Palm Pilot.
That's where I was going to go next.
Where'd they all go?
The same thing happened. We bought everybody Palms. And guess what? They ended up in a drawer.
Yeah.
Or they got broken. Or they took them home.
Yeah.
And we talked about support last night about this.
Okay, let's listen to Ms. Fierro, please.
But it is. Right now, currently, they have to take their notes on paper, go back to the office, and input everything into the computer. Here, what the evaluation would happen in real time. The administrators can walk through, take notes, save them, email them immediately. One of the things that teachers have, I remember they came up here, that we walk through and they don't get feedback. We just go to our offices, day goes on, and this would allow the feedback to be sent immediately to the teacher. Not necessarily the PDAS evaluation report, but any walkthroughs that they do. If they're walking in and they're walking into a ninth grade algebra one class, they can pull up C-scope and they can look at, you know, the IMDs, the lessons, anything that they want to see happening. It's just all the technology that we're using in our district is at the fingertips of the principals and the assistant principals as they're walking through the classroom. And basically, it would be a preference versus a PC versus an iPad. The tablets, either one would function with Eduphoria. Either the iPads have an app that is free. The PC, you just log in to Eduphoria, boom, it'll be right there. If there's no, then people have their personal preferences. Chris Avila was telling me that PCs sometimes tend to overheat. But bottom line, it's a preference. And it was just a preference that the principals asked for, and that's why I'm here. The tablet could go either way, but it was a problem.
How many would you purchase?
It was going to be one per principal and one for their AP. And also, when you turn on the iPad, it turns on immediately. The PC can load a little longer. But so it's, and I think you were saying that either way,
it is fast. It doesn't have to go through the connection through the internet and all that. So what Ms. Fierro was saying was, when you've seen them, when you turn them on, they go on really fast.
And again, it was their preference. It was their request so that they could use the PDS and the walkthroughs.
And it looks like a 10-pack of them costs $7,300. So they come in packs of 10.
So I was going to get one for each principal and one for assistant principal, because they also do walkthroughs.
And in the case of Bellevue High School that has, or is it just one assistant principal?
Well, I could, since I'll have two let go, or one let go, or, just kidding, I could give an extra one to the high school.
I can't help but notice it's local funds also, and my mind goes to somebody could go on a field trip. Somebody could get a raise. There's a lot of, you know.
And again, it is.
It could be for a lot of people instead of just a few people or a lot of students, even.
It is helping administrators be more efficient. That is the goal of the health efficiency, to free them up so that they can be out in the halls and the classrooms more.
One of the things I can say with Pam and I have been discussing this. Being a principal for almost 10 years, this was a chore. You know, and Dr. Murphy can echo this, I'm sure. Going in and to do good, strong walkthroughs, which is what you want us to do, and to go in there and have that information and to go in and give that timely feedback and be able to produce those reports in a timely manner that we're not just rushing and have the line out the door for the principal, you know, the next to last day of school, and having everybody sign off on it. The FileMaker Pro, I mean, that's the way I did it for years. It's the only thing we had. And I tr- try. It was my goal every year to make sure that everything would be done. You know, I worked very hard to make sure that it was done. And I kept on saying, there's got to be a better way. There's got to be a better
access, way. Access, Microsoft Access.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, you know,
Chair.
So, I do think this is...
I remember you just filed my report as assistant principal in 1995. That's... 16 years, and we're still, that's what we're still on now.
There's a newer version.
You know, the walkthroughs and the PDAS help are great, but there's another reason to consider this, and that is that we are trying to improve our technology stance in our school district. We're trying to improve it in every way, including instructional technology. We have set a goal as a district to improve the star chart rating of the school district, to move from early adopter up the ranks to a regular user. And having our leadership, having our principals with those tools, those iPads, taking a stronger interest in it, I think will trickle down to the rest of the staff, and will trickle down to the kids. And I think it is moving toward the future. Are they absolutely necessary? Absolutely not. Totally understand that. But I do think that as we move toward a more technologically based school district, our principals are going to have these types of tools. And that's some of the things. I think the teachers would be next. We have moved toward the laptops for all teachers. And this is the next evolution of that. As we go forward, I could easily see and envision a situation in a not too distant future where we would provide something like this to all professionals.
Ms. Cáceres?
I totally understand what Dr. Murphy's saying, but I'm looking at it from another aspect, and there's people that, quite frankly, are not into technology, don't want to use it. I think you can use Mr. Reveles, for example. He's into it. He has his own. If they want to purchase one, it's theirs. When you spend your own money and you purchase something, you're going to take care of it more than if somebody else buys it for you. It's not yours. I just seen too many technical devices been purchased, been abused, been not used over the course of time, and I think these are extremely expensive, and the support is not here. We don't have the technical people to support these type of devices. That's my standpoint on it.
Yeah, you won't make it work.
Yeah.
I agree.
The one thing with the iPad, as far as technical, what we're talking with here, and this is Jim, and Ms. Searle said it yesterday. Okay, I know, I think I'm listening. But Ms. Searle said yesterday that change is hot. Yeah. And what Dr. Murphy just said, you know, like some of the things like FileLink Pro. FileLink Pro is tedious. Okay, it's tedious to use. This is easy to use. And one of the things is we have to change. You know, we were put in current, put in a brand new lab, with Macs, you know, and put in a graphic design class that has 30 kids per class in that graphic design. 30 kids in each one of those classes. That's amazing. I mean, I'm just astounded by the numbers. So the special ed department has taught iPads and iPods to meet the needs of a very at-risk population that's underserved in so many places. So what are they doing? They're dragging us and bringing us in to change that we need to do. And we're doing it, you know, with our eyes wide open, and we're jumping in. So we will develop that infrastructure, and we're going to be doing it gladly with our eyes open and jumping in with... you know, and the iPads and iPods, the iPods are the big ones, the smaller ones, and those are just ridiculous to see, you know, which are good for, Pam and I were saying, for young eyes. The iPads are much better for us. But that's the only thing I can say is that we can absolutely and that's the only thing I would like to say, is that I do think, like Monica's saying, the technology's changing, I understand with the devices. So, we have to keep up. And we've got to retool, not retool, but we've got to adjust to what our clients are demanding. And we have to meet the needs, especially for the clients and the special populations. And so I think it's going to have to change, but that's fine.
So, through the chair.
Yes, sir.
Martha, Ms. Aguirre, this is through local money. What funding is, do we have it available? What are we talking about here?
Well, it would be through the budgeted funds that were allocated to curriculum and instruction. And so it's within her budget. Additional funding has not been requested. It's basically the money that is generated through our ADA and our property taxes that are collected.
That we've allocated the curriculum instruction.
Right.
So it's within her normal budget. So it's not outside, it's not any extra purchase outside of our regular budget, her budget.
Because it really does help the cause of curriculum instruction for walkthroughs to occur and for teachers to get feedback, for them to be able to access C-School like they're here to when they're walking into a classroom. And just to be able to walk down the halls and walk into a few classrooms and just see what the teachers are doing and give them feedback based on the key and all the training and the professional development and the programs that we're purchasing. I need help with monitoring. I need feedback from principals and administrators and instructional coaches to know how are things going on campuses, what support do they need? Do they need more licenses? Do they not like it? So it really helps me when they have more access to the tools.
Any other comments? Ms. Mendoza, Ms. Quintana? Mrs. Searles, do you agree? Ms. Casares? And I don't agree. So, no, I don't agree. We don't agree. Next agenda.
Item H, discussion and formulation of recommendation to the Board of Trustees regarding possible future curriculum and instruction purchases. Ms. Fitt.
Okay. The other thing that I wanted to discuss with you, because I didn't get it, where I was still working on some things during the last week between the time that we received the packet for this meeting to today. A couple of other things that I want to talk to you about was interactive notebook training with Region 19. Did y'all get anything?
Mm-hmm.
No. There should be in your packet for Tuesday or Wednesday, but I'll just talk to you about it. Basically, what it is, we have a staff development day on October 31st. And I've been getting requests for interactive notebook training. So all the core teachers, I would like to provide a day of interactive notebook training. I don't know if y'all recall at that one meeting where they brought the interactive notebook and they had the foldables inside. And basically, it's a record of all the students' work that they can refer back to. They can use that for their prior knowledge. It's a journal of all their work. And it's, again, it's kind of like the Kagan strategies. It's another tool for teachers to engage the learners in the classroom and have all of their work in one place. Instead of in a folder or in this notebook, their data, you saw that some teachers were having their students put in their Edufolia reports. So they were constantly monitoring their own learning, their own data, and their work. They can show it to their peers, their teacher can grade, they can take it home and say, show to their parents and what I'm learning today. And so, or look what I've been learning during parent conferences. It's a portfolio, basically. But again, teachers need tools. Teachers need strategies. They need to know what folders are best for that. What are things that I can use in science? And so, what I'd like to do that day, I've already talked to the region about it, and they're willing to pretty much let us have the center that day, and I'll have 100 math teachers go to, they've had two workshops, break them up into 50 each, so I have 100 math teachers getting trained, 100 ELA teachers getting trained, and I'm thinking the most heavily tested areas are probably going to have the most takers, and then 50 science and 50 social studies, so they break up into their content areas, K-12, all grade levels. And the cost of that would be $20,000. And I don't, it will be in your package in order to train about 300 teachers in the district.
And when would you do that?
October 31st, our staff development.
Staff development.
So there will be no substitute, so we will be saving quite a bit of money on that.
And the funding for that?
The funding, Title II.
Title II funding.
And it's professional development for teachers.
And it would just be our teachers.
It's just county teachers.
So most of our mainline teachers would be driving over to Region 19 for that day and basically have the center. That'd be great.
Yes, and they'll be provided with we'll purchase the materials, but what my goal is also to purchase materials for a teacher to walk away with a box to implement it in their classroom tomorrow, or November 1st.
We probably could offer transportation, too, if we were going to have that many teachers. We could look at it.
Yeah, but parking might be an issue that day for some of those teachers.
What training are you saying?
It's called Interacting Notebooks.
Okay, and provided by Region 19?
Yes. Okay. We'll pay them. Yes, it's the Region 19 staff.
Some of our people are already trained on that, correct, or no?
Yes, some are. In fact, I was talking to someone at the high school that they had already got some, but they would love to have some more ideas. Because I had thought about that too. I know some kind of two in middle school, some of them had some of the training. But
so the notion is you put this in the packet tomorrow for approval on Tuesday?
I believe it was already submitted. I think it's already been submitted.
It's been submitted, yes. But if you decide to pull it, we'll pull it.
Yes.
But we could move forward. Everything's good to show the board tomorrow in the packet and then give them on Tuesday. Okay.
Well, just because I had to have it by 12 in case, so that we can always pull it. But in order to have it for Tuesday's board meeting, I've already been talking to the region.
Any questions? No. Ms. Mendoza?
The training has to take place at Region 19.
Well, they need 6 rooms for 50 people. And any
of the space.
And it's included in the price.
It'll be like a field trip.
Mm-hmm. And when is it going to take place?
Yeah, a lot of teachers are going tomorrow for Ruby Payne training. So they'll try. I'm sorry?
When is this training? When are you wanting this to take place?
I'm wanting it to take place October 31st because it's our staff development day. And so I had to make sure that they were available and they would be.
What day of the week is that? Anybody?
It's a Monday.
Monday.
Which is the staff development day already.
No kids that day.
And how does this tie into the rest of the staff development that we have just thus far this evening approved or, you know, given our okay to? How is this going to?
Again, it's student engagement.
Mm-hmm.
Students having the portfolio, so.
But is it interact, you know, do the pieces of all of these puzzles fit together to create a big picture? Or are we fragmenting the system and going, oh, well, we'll just try this over here. You know, that's fun, but this looks like a lot of fun, too. Let's do that. Or is it making a comprehensive staff development that everybody's going to grow and learn and benefit from?
I don't know if you remember that last PowerPoint that when I had come to you was going places. P was for professional development.
Mm-hmm.
L was for communities. A, analysis of data. C, curriculum. E, engagement.
Mm-hmm.
With all learners. And S, special pops. And this really does hit the curriculum because they're going to base all their activities around the TEKS, so they're going to model the curriculum. It also definitely ties into the engagement, the special populations, because this is hands-on for, will help our struggling learners as well as our EL learners, because they're also going to tie it to the English language proficiency standards. It hits the P for professional development. It's certainly something they can bring around the table learning communities when they're planning lessons, what foldables will we, can we tie into this? So I think it hits all of the places.
And cohesively works into the rest of the staff development that you wanted to do for the year?
Okay. Through the chair. Really, the whole staff development and these product procurements, the curriculum instruction really fit under three umbrellas. Umbrella one is the tier two products. The products for the tier two instruction for the students that are struggling in math, science, social studies, language arts. That's where the Achieve 3000 is for reading language arts. The Renaissance, Accelerated Reader, to get at the heart of the curriculum. Then we have the engagement and the teaching strategies. Okay, you've got this product, now how to best teach it. That is the Kagan strategies that they had actually in this room today. And the teacher-created materials stuff and the manipulatives and all the different types of ways. Then the third is the monitoring and data. And tracking kids, and that's the Eduphoria piece. So these all are organic. They all do fit together. And I'm sure that on the 31st, if we go to Region 19, it'll probably be more along the middle about the engagement and teaching strategies. But it'll be right in line with what they've already learned. And since we already mentioned, you know, the Kagan strategies, we are not able to get every teacher yet into it. You were asking, well, can they share? Well, on the 31st, if we do this, it'll be the lion's share of teachers. It won't just be a select number that are able to go.
And one teacher had told me that with all the training, Kagan training that they receive, and the Stetson. Mm-hmm.
Stetson's another one. Strategies.
Papers, the strategies were great, but kids' papers were everywhere. This brought it all together for the teacher and the student, actually. So it was all really
important.
Any structure they
use,
strategy is all
going to
be in that
interactive. Has all this come up through the DAC and the CIC's on campuses? I mean, has it, you know, started at the beginning and worked up, and everybody likes it and approves of it?
Those are the things that are most successful. For example, the Kagan, it's coming up because people are asking for it. And so that's, we're really. Teachers, for the most part, are driving most of the staff development.
Okay, any other questions? Okay.
There was one other thing. The other thing I wanted to talk to you about was, do you remember in the spring, you all approved the ELA adoption. At the time, the state had Proclamation 2011 out, but they still weren't deciding if they were going to fund it or not. So we waited and waited and waited. Finally, in the summer, in the meanwhile, the science supplemental adoption came out, which was only offered online. Well, we had brought in all these teachers, and we took them through the textbook evaluation process for the ELA and for the pre-K and for the ESL. And they made a choice, and we brought it to the board, and y'all approved it. But again, we were waiting on funding. Well, then the state said that they are not going to fund it in the same way that they used to. That they are now giving us what they call an instructional materials allotment. Basically, says as long as it's aligned, you decide on how you want to spend this money. And they cut us about $200,000 because they combined the technology allotment with the instructional materials allotment. So now. Are we just going to go forth and purchase everything as though the state would have purchased it? So we were thinking about some things a little differently. And the elementary principals some of the directors decided to pull back on some of the stuff that we didn't spell in handwriting. We didn't need that as much as we needed some of the other. The other thing that came about was the science the supplements of science adoption. I had teams of teachers come in the summer because it was a summer adoption. And we had to make a choice by a certain date in July, or that's when the list was going to come out in July. So I brought in teams of teachers at all grade levels, and I took them through, even though it wasn't a proclamation, I took them through an evaluation process for I invited them to textbook fair that Isleta put on and let them peruse all of the materials. So they picked about four that they really wanted to look at a deeper level, and so I took them through this rubric, and I'll give you an example. Just so you can see. And then they selected the one that had, and these are different. You can see how they graded them, front and back.
Does that include technology too?
This is, the science was only offered online. I'm sorry, let me give you the others. When they were going to fund it, they were offering it online only. So we looked at, so that's what all the publishers put out. It's front and back. And so they looked at, on the blue side, the content. And what I asked them to do is pick about three or four standards that we were scoring low on in our district, and take them through this process. Find those standards in the resource and take it through the process. So is it aligned to the standards? How accurate is the information? Is science, in a lot of the sections of science before science fiction, how is the concept developed and in what context is it being taught? And so they gave it a score. And then wrote what the strengths and some limitations were. If we go on the back, okay, now we're looking at the work teachers do. How is it going to help us, you know, with the 5E model and be a good teacher? So they look at the instructional model, they follow the 5E model. What teaching strategies does it offer? And it actually had a rubric, which I don't have, that explained each of these things. Inquiry development, does it have differentiation, does it offer assessment? So they scored it based on 1 through 5, and the highest scoring resource is the one that they wound up choosing. And so that will also be kind of approval of their choices.
So what will you be asking, Pam, regarding this?
Basically, that they approve the choices of the evaluators, which were the curriculum writers in the summer, and they came in to evaluate the products. They spent a day going through each of the online products.
And it's showing that Holt was the choice?
I'm not sure.
Or is that just an example?
Holt was not the choice. STEM scope was the choice. It had more points. You just have one. I just passed out the rubric.
Okay.
That's the lower scoring.
Any questions?
I'm not real sure
what you'll be bringing
this
back.
Yeah, what you're talking about. These are books that
they were online resources that they evaluated. They have a choice to get a supplemental online resource. Another adoption is supposed to be coming out in about 2 years.
And are they at the same book?
Because we've had new teaks.
Uh-huh.
We had new teaks last year. And so they looked at four online resources, and they took it through this process of analyzing it as aligned to the standards.
But these are not, this is just an example for us. This is, because this looks like this, they're both Houghton Mifflin and Harcourt, both signed.
I will have all of them for you with number one on top in your packet.
But these really aren't.
So you're preparing.
Whoever has STEM scope,
They're the winner.
All right.
So middle school and elementary, they both chose Nemsco.
So and this was through the curriculum writers this summer. So the curriculum writers were brought in, and they were, our top teachers, and given an opportunity to review online resources in science and in.
Most of them were curriculum writers. Some were not. Just
not them all.
I was trying to get people in.
They
were teachers.
They scored them using a rubric, and you're going to be bringing to the board on Tuesday the top choices.
It'll be in their packet.
This is going, and it's for science, right? And it's going in hand with that other thing we purchased, the teacher-driven...
Teacher-created materials.
That one.
Yes.
Okay.
Which is not online, which is the reading basics and then the content books.
Okay.
Ms. Fierro, and the cost associated with this?
The cost I have here... which I'll also include in the packet.
Thank you. And again, this is coming out of the instructional materials allotment, which is actually managed by Ernie Ortiz, our textbook.
Are these adopted materials? State adopted materials?
State approved.
State, they are state approved materials? Mm-hmm.
Yes. We selected only from state-approved materials.
My
from the commissioner's list.
My question is, so this thing that you provided to us,
yes.
Nothing but this rubric.
And I'll give you in your packet what the one meant, what the two meant, what the three meant.
Okay, but... you mentioned that it's online. Is it something
the
that they
resources is online?
Okay, and they're going to be able when we're supposedly approving on Tuesday. It's something that they're going to that the teachers are going to be able to go in online. Now it's not like I know we're not
it's
approving
web-based.
Textbooks. And, yes. Okay.
Web-based.
Okay. And for third through well, it's third through high school.
Actually.
Well, it says high school here too.
High school chose a different.
Yeah, they perfection then.
Well, but it's different grade levels. Third through high school, is
yes.
that what we're recommending? What has been recommended?
Yes, third through high school. Third through physics.
These internet resources, would they be tier two or would they be tier one?
Tier one.
So it would
tier
be
one and tier two.
Mainline stuff that the teachers could go online
to help
enhance science instruction.
And to help address the needs. And also tier two.
Okay, speak science. Because previously I know that we had not purchased science textbooks, and I know that those are going to be obsolete, so this is going to replace, this is going to be it. Okay.
Well, wait a minute.
Well, in 2 years, Ernie was saying that they're coming out with another, but I don't know if that will be online or if that will be, but again, it's not like they're saying choose a textbook, we'll buy you everything that comes with it. They're going to say, you choose what you want and you buy it, here's some money. That's basically what they're doing now. They're just giving us an allotment of money and saying, so we could choose to buy books, we could choose to buy online materials, we could choose to buy technology. You know, it's instructional materials.
I have a question. As far as the different subjects in chemistry, why is there such a large discrepancy with the amounts? As like chemistry. District needs 505, biology 408. Why? I mean, I know there are four measures of science are needed. So why is it so different the amounts, the quantities?
I'm not sure unless it's that period where students were taking IPC and some students didn't, and so you have like a double whammy of chemistry. But I can research that. I can find out why. How early came up with the
535? Yeah. Well, I thought they had switched the chemistry and the physics. From
right now, it's in the order of biology, chemistry, and physics courses.
Okay.
So you'll have sophomores and juniors taking chemistry. Because you might have students going biology, chemistry, physics. Some may have gone... biology and IPC route, and then mm-hmm. chemistry. So you're going to have more taking chemistry. That's possibly.
Okay. Yeah, I just that's it has me wondering why the discrepancy is so big.
Okay.
I have one more question.
Thank you, Charles.
Will we be using textbooks in our science classes?
Whatever textbooks they currently have, they can still
they can use. And will they be encouraged to use them?
That is, they will if it addresses the standards in an appropriate way. I wouldn't encourage or discourage. I mean, it would be based on the alignment. There's definitely a need for the supplement because of the new standards.
Mm-hmm.
But
I mean, will children have something to hold and read? And I want to take this home because I really like science and I'd like to, yeah, I mean.
I do believe so.
Our kids aren't doing like really well in science. I mean, that's not one of our highest points. Will they have something to hold in their hands and, you know, I can take this home tonight and I can look it over and I can learn more. Or is it going to be, you don't have anything at home, so I get to go home and do nothing.
We're not ready to go 100% technology until we can have a tablet in every student's hand that has an online book.
Okay.
We're still going to be reliant on.
So we're not putting anybody at a disadvantage?
No.
Okay, thank you.
And this is a teacher resource in here. A teacher can print only what she needs. It's a supplement.
Okay. There's no recommendation here. I guess it's just discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Ms. Tony, next agenda item, please. I mean, I'm sorry, any other questions? No? Okay. Ms. Tony.
Item I, discussion and formulation of recommendation to the Board of Trustees regarding revisions to EIC local policy regarding academic achievement class rankings.
No, we need Daryl.
Got him up? Where's my
class rank.
Oh, yes.
Sorry.
Thank you. Oh, I was done.
Thank you.
Okay, this is an adjustment that the principals wanted to make to EIC Local regarding advanced placement and dual credit points. Before, if you'll notice on page 3 of 4, the second or the first full paragraph that's in red that's crossed out, that was what was the case before, where if the student completed any pre-AP or AP course and got at least an 80, they would receive 10 extra points. So we're just wanting to differentiate between AP courses and earning between a 75 and 79 and getting 5 points, continuing to get the 10 points for 80% or higher, and an additional 5 points if they score a 3, 4, or 5 on the College Board exam. An incentive for really wanting to boost those scores on those AP exams. An incentive for students to score well on those.
And an incentive for students to take the exams.
Yes.
Currently, students enrolled in AP are not hardwired, required to take the exams, and that's a problem that we have. They take the course, they never take the test. And if we get a little carrot out there, we'll get better scores and better attendance.
And then for pre-AP, they get 5 points.
Which is without the test. That's before the exams. You know, I would say this is a lot to digest. the board might want to say thank you very much to Ms. Fierro, look at it over the weekend, and make some phone calls to Ms. Fierro or myself, and then we could take this matter up on Tuesday.
I have a question.
But isn't that why we're here tonight?
Yes, ma'am.
So we don't
yes,
have to do that on Tuesday?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Fierro, did you look at the other surrounding districts and what they're doing?
Yes. EPISB actually is doing this.
And
I did look at a sweater of Socorro.
And did you call, contacted TASB?
Well, this was approved for EPISD, so I know it's been through the TASB process.
Is the big change that instead of just giving 10 points for getting AD and over, we want to give 5 points now to give a little extra encouragement? Is that what I'm seeing is the major difference?
As well as dual credit.
Right now, dual credit doesn't get extra points?
Currently, they don't.
Really?
Well, we've got it scratched out.
Is it?
Uh-huh. For which a student earns state graduation credit and dual credit courses for which a student earns state graduation. On page 3 of 4 in the red, second paragraph.
See? Oh, yes. Okay. Yes, they do.
So we always have given for dual credit then?
Mm-hmm.
So the real difference is we just want to give
the 5 and 10.
5, because we've always done the 10. You got your 80% and you could get your 10 points. Now we want to give 5 points if you could get to a 75, to a 79. I have a problem with that because there's a big difference between a 70. That's a long span. You've got an 80% or you could get 75 to 79.
Well, that's a C versus an A or a B.
Yeah.
You also have a reverse logic of a student that might not be the most stellar student in the school, but they, you get them to take an AP course. You know, okay, I'll try one. And they struggle through it and they get a C, and it still has some reward.
Yeah, but do you want to bring the rest of the ones who made an A in it down? Do you water down the property?
Well, they're still getting the 10 points.
Yeah, but their 10 points doesn't seem quite so 10 anymore since everybody else can get 5. You're the top, you're the cream of the crop, and all of a sudden everybody else can get 5. What's your incentive to be the cream of the crop?
The extra 5.
I don't see it as being enough. Maybe that's kind of mean of me, but I think you need to get 80% and you get 10 points. Maybe I'm just a little meaner than most, but I know that's what I held my children to.
Well, we have one of our top students in our district here with us tonight. Maybe she could. Would you be upset if they gave 5 extra points to a C student, Sarah, as opposed to you getting 10 extra points for an A and a B?
Well, I just think that if you're taking a class, you should take it to the best of your ability. And if they work hard and they show that they deserve the 5 points, I wouldn't be so upset. Whereas if there's a C student who came to class and copied off of other people, and then they got the 5 points, I think I'd be more upset.
Mm-hmm. Which, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm not for giving the 5 points. I'm good with sticking with the 10 person.
What about the extra points if they take the exam and they do well on the exam? 3, 4, 5. Is that?
Mm-hmm. I like that. You bet.
I like that.
Absolutely. They're hard exams.
Well, and part of it was incentive for students to
take the
not be afraid to take a more rigorous course.
But they can take it. I mean, they can take it. They don't have to be afraid.
I think I know where this is. This conversation stemming from, I know that there are parents that have asked that their kids be removed from pre-AP classes or AP classes because it brought down their GPA, because it was more rigorous, and the buy-in hasn't been there, and therefore classes aren't making, and we've had this conversation. That's what the problem, okay. I think that's where this is coming from, because, I mean, I've seen the syllabus. It's robust. It's a lot. And, yeah, I mean, I don't know if it canceled yet or not, but the AP class, chemistry, 7 kids are taking it. And that's the biology class, 5 kids signed up, so it didn't make. And for me, for my kid, I was pretty upset. I mean, you want those kids, like Ms. Joyner in the audience, that want to do their best, that want to prepare themselves for college. It's unfortunate for them that because the buy-in isn't there from other parents and from other kids, because it's hard, because it brings down their GPA, the classes don't make. And then everybody's at a disadvantage. I think, am I right? Is that where this is coming from, sort of?
Yes, because often these students are being from the top.
Yeah, they're more concerned about, exactly. That's step. Why I think.
I understand. Mm-hmm. So they're not going to, sometimes they're going to choose the easier route in order to keep their GPA higher.
Yeah.
That does, so in giving the 5 points, you filled the class?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for every argument that you have about the top kids being justly rewarded, which is totally valid, mm-hmm. there is an equal argument for the at-risk student who we need to shepherd. And one way to shepherd is to give that carrot a little bit. And you know, Sarah pointed out both types. You get the C student who gets the C honestly with integrity, and you get the C student who doesn't get it honestly with integrity. But
you also have A students like that. You do have A students like that, too.
But what I'm hearing is you're not filling the class.
Exactly.
And then you've just hurt everybody.
Exactly. The class doesn't make.
And so the kids who want to go ahead can't go ahead.
That's true.
The rest of them didn't get their 5 points.
Right. So you can make an argument that this would actually benefit the top kids.
And, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Pam, when we had this conversation, you, in fact, did say that statistics show even if a kid takes an AP class and makes a 75, they're more well-prepared than a kid that just takes a regular class with no pre-AP, no AP, correct? It benefits the student to take the class, even if they don't make an A or a B? Or
absolutely. And being an AP calculus class, you're definitely going to be more prepared for college than if you weren't in that class.
Yeah. You convinced me. It's filling the class.
I have somebody in that situation right now, and it's unfortunate.
I hear you.
Sad.
And again, if you have over the weekend you want to discuss this, feel free to call me or Pam, and we can talk more about this, and we'll bring it back on.
Is there any other? Is that the real need of it?
That's
that the change.
Another thing that was added at the bottom under conduct was that. We expect all graduates to wear the school designated cap and gown. Should that, just kind of be a little proactive there. It's about enrollment and
have we in any way left our Canyon kids out in the cold? Have we in any way left our Canyon kid who has been here since kinder or since?
That's
you
what
know,
we're actually protecting.
That's what I can,
that's
okay.
That
the kid doesn't come in from Coronado at the last moment and say, oh, gee, I'm going to be the valedictorian.
Right.
Okay.
So look at that blue paragraph on page 2. That does not. We took out the conversion scale, which we needed to update this anyway. And if you recall, the last one was more specific for A and A minus and so forth when they come. And we actually took that out of this completely because it's in the EIA logo.
But it didn't change. It's the same.
Right.
It changed from here, but it changed already via a local. We needed to compile it.
But the conversion scale is the same.
It's not the same. In EIA local, it was updated the last time that you all approved it in the last December. We needed to bring this up to speed.
anyway. We're just going to go ahead and remove it from here because it's already in the EIA book.
Which you've already approved.
Which you've already approved. Okay. So this is outdated, in other words. This needed to be updated anyway, this policy.
Hi, I have a question, and I don't know if I missed it. How about, are we going to, I don't know if it's there, I haven't seen it, but when a student's going to be taking so many assessments and how it's going to affect their GPA, remember that?
End of course. And
oh, yes, yes.
Are we including?
We're working on that policy. CASB said they're going to get back to us in 2 or 3 weeks. We already submitted our first submission, and we met with the principal's committee twice. And after we resolve that and fix that, then we're going to take it to the teachers, and then we'll hopefully bring it to you all in October.
And it's going to be in this new policy?
It's going to be EIA local.
EIA local? It is going to affect this too, no?
Well, no, it'll just be how the kids do on the individual courses based on how the end of course exam factors into the course.
It's going to affect their GPA too.
It's going to affect their GPA indirectly. It's going to affect their class ranking through their grades, which is not really in listed as policy.
Well, but that's what I'm saying. It's going to affect them anyway.
Absolutely.
That's
the end of course exams will
mm-hmm.
impact their grades. Now, what
if we choose, right? If the board chooses,
well, but
that's legal.
It is legal, Dr. Murphy.
But there's some discretion to the board, isn't there, on that?
Well, the discretion to the board is going to be on how we average the grades.
But it is going to be 15% or something?
But no matter what we do,
you see, it's there.
EOC will have to be 15% of their final grade.
You see, it's there.
Now, what the state is saying right now is that they're going to give a scale score for that end of course exam, but they're not going to give us any type of conversion for that scale score. So we've got to
look into that. So even if we move forward with this, there's still a lot of tweaking.
To this, no, but to EIA local, yes. We submitted some choices that the district wanted to go in, like a baseline, how we want semester averaging versus per semester. Take the whole semester average, make that 85% of the grade, and then the EOC be 15%. Of that versus 42.5% semester one, 42.5%, and then not wait till the very end until we plug in those grades. So
you see, and
it's very complicated.
And it is very complicated, like you said, because what if someone from another district comes with another policy, and how is he going to average with that 15% from another district?
Right. And then what about retakes?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So those are all things that. We've already started the initial process. September 21st, I'm meeting with leaders from all the districts in the city to talk about that issue to see what is everybody else doing. So we're... Whatever I have from CASB at the next meeting, I'll bring them.
Can you also get us, you mentioned that the other districts had whatever they have approved, or can you provide us copies, please?
Yes, any district that has already starting points were sent out in March with four different options. They just released a revision August 31st and removed two of those options. So any district that wrote a policy based on those two have to go back to the drawing board. So we're at the right spot right now.
So
we're just where we need to be.
Okay.
This process.
So it's.
Their TA is.
So.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're in a good place.
So Ms. Laurie,
I'm good.
The 5 points and the 10 points, we're going to leave it as is. Okay, Ms. Okay. Then we're okay with the board, with the committee to recommend. Any other questions in the meantime, Ms. Kinson?
I just want to note that it also addresses those students who have been placed in DA.
Oh, yes, it does. That was
right from the student code of conduct.
Exactly. We took that from the student code of conduct based on Sylvia and also the recommendation.
Okay. Recommended. Next agenda item.
Item J, discussion and formulation of recommendation to the Board of Trustees regarding CDA local policy regarding investments.
CDA local.
Thank you
all. CDA.
Good job, Pam.
Hey, by that, I appreciate that.
Who's wrong?
But which one is it? Because the packet says CDA and the...
It's
CDA, it's not CE. Okay. CDA.
Good evening. You do have a copy of the packet, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what policy is it for the record?
The policy is CDA local.
CDA local.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's related to other revenue investments. And basically, what's happened is through the this legislature that just ended in June, House Bill 226 passed a requirement that authorized or required that all governmental entities include additional verbiage in the policy related to CD certificates of deposits. And in essence, I did provide you a copy of the policy with a highlighted section that has the wording with just a line that's crossed off. And basically it says, other obligations, the principal and interest of which are unconditionally guaranteed or insured by or backed by the full faith and credit of the state of this state or the United States, or their respective agencies and instrumentalities, including obligations that are fully guaranteed or insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation or by the explicit full faith and credit of the United States as permitted by Government Code 2256.009. And basically what it's saying is that we are authorized to invest funds in certificates of deposit as long as the investment complies with particular conditions, such as that we are using a broker that has a main office or branch in the state in which we are conducting business, that the broker or depository institution select arranges for deposit funds and certificates of deposit in one or more FDIC-insured depository institutions, that the full amount of the principal and the accrued interest in each CD is insured, and that the investing entity appoints the depository institution selected by the investing entity or a clearing broker with the SCE and operating under the SCE rules. So basically, they've added additional guidelines for the option of using certificates of deposit as investment rules. And as we have been discussing, and we discussed in the committee meeting, we are in the process of looking out for going out and seeking investment opportunities for the bond money that we just received. And so definitely this is another option that I will meet with First Southwest, our financial advisors, and then see if this is an option we want to go with. However, it was a requirement that we added to our policy effective June 17th of this last year. And so this would be taken to the board on Tuesday for a first reading of the policy.
So, do you have any questions? Mm-hmm. Ms. Kinson, Ms. Mendoza?
And I haven't any either. We're in agreement to recommend it to the full board?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I am.
Tony?
Yes, ma'am.
Item K is discussion and formulation of recommendation to the Board of Trustees regarding extracurricular activities of Northwest Early College High School students. Dr. Martin.
Does she have
that? Yes, she does.
Chairman Gonzalez, members of the board, members of the audience, we come before you in discussion mode tonight. We have a new principal at Northwest Early College that we're thrilled to have, Ms. Yvette Savina, and she joins me tonight. And we have the first group of seniors now at Northwest Early College, of which at least 18 of them have already finished their community college experience, their associate's degree. You'll remember that at the end of the school year, we had two, but over the summer, a whole bunch more joined them, and we're at 18. Those students, at least a large majority of them, are already taking classes at UTEP in their third year of college, and will be finishing Northwest Early College with not only their associates and their high school diploma, but also multiple hours at UTEP in their third year. We're very proud of that. Along with this situation that we have, and as we move forward with Northwest, there is a feeling amongst some that we need to take a look at these students who have completed their community college experience, the associate's degree, and possibly open the door for extracurricular activities that they really haven't been able to fully participate in their freshman, sophomore, and junior year, as they now have done the main goal of the early college, and that is completed their associates and are college, fully college ready moving forward. On the other hand, there's a feeling that maybe early college and Northwest should stick to its core mission, and that is that not only prepare these students for college, but make college the number one thing, and that if they finish their community college, that again, their focus remains on college and shifts to UTEP. And there's these competing views. Administration's recommendation is to not change our policy at current time regarding not allowing Northwest Early College students to participate at Canyon-Teo High School in extracurricular activities. That is our recommendation. And I'm going to let Ms. Savina talk to that. We do have membership in the Northwest Early College community that disagree with that recommendation, that feel that, hey, these kids have done this wonderful thing. They're some of the best students in the district. If they feel they can take on an extracurricular at the high school after they've completed, then that's that should be given to them. But that is not administration's recommendation, and I'll let Ms. Savina talk from there.
Good evening, board members. In terms of early college and my views regarding early college, our focus is on academics. And, as we've been able to have the students graduate in 3 years with their associate's degree, in focusing in academics, we have also been able to create a transitional process to the university so that the students continue to reap the benefits of those academics. Their focus continues to be academics, and they are not sidetracked, so that really the participation is really more in terms of organized sports, so that they have the focus still in academics, and their time is not taken away, by after-school practices, morning practices, tournaments, which will create absences potentially, and could cause information not to be given in terms of them not being in class, drops or withdrawals taking place, etc. And so in looking at the big picture and trying to make sure that the students are completely engaged and focused in terms of the academics, especially these three-year graduates, have something very positive going on where, their tuition is taken care of, their books, transportation, etc. And so they're continuing to reap the benefits of the academics and moving forward. I am in favor of continuing our system the way that it is and making sure that our students are fully focused in the college experience, that we are preparing them, that we're taking care of their transition, and that there is something that still exists beyond the Associate of Arts degree, and that's on at the university.
Any questions?
So the feeling is that you've heard administration's recommendation. I know that we have open forum here, and we have at least one community member that wants to speak to this, and maybe we could move that up, Madam Chair, after we get done. We ask the board to contemplate that. There really doesn't need to be an action taken because we're basically recommending current policy. Where action would have to be taken is if there would be a desire to change. So that's where we are. I understand that we are talking, the type of student that we're talking about is a rare breed. We are talking about a go-getter. We are talking about somebody who has taken on the world and slayed it and succeeded. Finished their Associate of Arts, enrolled in UTEP as a third-year college student while they're still in high school. Been a stellar leader even amongst their early college peers in that not all the early college kids even reach this pinnacle after 3 years. And you want to just give them the world. You absolutely do. And yet at the same time, there's the integrity of the program and the precedent issue that you have and the feeling that you need to stay focused on the university effort as opposed to the extracurricular effort, which is what they sign up for. I think that's a key piece to this. When the students come in as freshmen, they sign a document that basically says that the early college experience is understood that it is not an extracurricular environment, or at least not to the extent where they're going over to the high school. And the feeling is that we need to maintain that at this juncture.
Okay. Would you like to address the committee?
Yes,
go ahead, sir.
Come on up to the thank you. Chairman and Chairman and committee members, my name is John Joyner, and I'm a community member, and I have a daughter who is attending early college high school. And for those of you who know me, you know how important this is to me because I have a neck towel. Okay? I have a handout I'd like to give with a policy that we would like to have considered, and it is more stringent than I believe what requirements that the NC2A puts on students. I would remind that there are at least 400,000 students, according to the NC2A, that are participating in college and in sports at the same time. And they don't have the transitional skills when they come out of high school that these young people have when they come out of the early college program. You have people who are seniors at Kansas State High School now who will be going into a college experience with not the least bit of preparation, and I think they will do just fine. I'll give you a moment to read this and then continue.
Can I just ask a clarifying question?
Yes, ma'am.
In what I'm reading here, have you already read this, Dr. Murphy?
No, you just
said. Okay. I just wanted to...
It wasn't in my packet. Oh, my gosh.
I just want to know what the legalities are regarding UIL rules.
That would have to be fleshed out. Coach Brooks has brought up.
I don't think it is legal. I'm pretty sure it's not.
UIL says that if a school does not offer athletics,
okay,
or extracurricular activities, that a student may participate in those activities at another school.
Right. Everyone is eligible somewhere. That is true. That is the founding principle of UIL, eligibility, that everyone has a home. If it isn't their home campus because they don't offer, it can be a neighboring campus. That is true. But it would be something that we would have to work through. For instance, the other high school coaches at the other areas in our division would have to be notified. It probably would have to be that, but I don't think it's insurmountable. But Coach Brooks did have the same question, Ms. Kosser.
Okay. Any questions?
Okay, everyone had a chance to read what we're proposing?
Yes.
Again, we're not asking to do anything that's going to be disruptive to anybody. I will tell you that if my daughter cannot do what I'm asking you to let her do, you won't have to pull her out of her program. I will pull her out of athletics. Academics have always been foremost in our household. By the same token, I have a daughter who gets up every morning and runs 2 miles. Okay, we shoot baskets at 9:30 at night down here on the lighted courts down here, because she was led to believe at one point in time that she might be able to participate in sports. And this all started because she wanted to run track, okay? And then other people said, well, she's a really good basketball player. Can you look at basketball? And we said, as long as it's not an issue, it's fine. All I'm asking you to do is allow people, parents and students, to make choices for themselves that don't interfere with the academics. And so far as the transition from high school to college, these students are better prepared to transition from high school to college than all the kids on your football team currently at the high school, most of the ones on your basketball team, because they've spent 2 years in college. They know what college requires. Now, it is a different situation at UTEP. But again, parental involvement and parental guidance will determine whether or not someone meets this criteria. That is higher than the NC2A criteria to play sports. You can play sports at any college or university with less than a 3.0 GPA. All we're asking is give each family the option to decide for their children what's best for their children. We understand that we signed a document going in that said we wouldn't participate in extracurricular activities, because we were first class in. We didn't know what to expect, and we wanted academics to be ahead of athletics. But bragging on this young lady a little bit, she finished a four-year program in 3 years. She basically takes 2 classes at the high school and 3 at UTEP, and she has the time in her schedule to do it. I'm not saying every person who will ask to do this can do this. I'm saying don't tell people they can't do something without giving them an opportunity. You know, we're not looking for equal outcome. We're looking for equal opportunity. So if we would give these young people an opportunity to be involved in music or some form of sports or some kind of team competition, debate team, whatever, each family will make that decision for their children. I think all of you who may have children in school would like the opportunity to say, this is what I would like my son and daughter to do. Now, don't get me wrong. We appreciate the opportunity early college high school has afforded our daughter, and we will support the early college high school forever. And if you decide against this, we won't be happy, but we will abide by your decision. By the same token, all I'm asking you to do is give individuals an opportunity to make a decision. And if they can't abide by whatever policy you set, then it's on them. It's not you saying you can't do this. It's the student saying, I can't do this. It's a semantical difference, but it's a very important difference. I mean, I have the greatest respect for the superintendent and the principal. They don't know my daughter like I know my daughter. Okay? And she will tell us whether she can do this or not. And all children will tell us. You know, we went into it thinking it was going to take 4 years for her to get, you know, the associate's degree and everything was going to be fine. And this all came about because she did an extraordinary thing. All I'm asking you to do is allow her to do another extraordinary thing for KNTA Independent School District. And, you know, the other early college high schools aren't doing this. But we can lead in this respect. KNTA can be out in front and allowing an opportunity to young. We don't have to follow everybody else. Maybe somebody can follow us. And, you know, the benefits to this, as I see it, it's continued positive representation, KNTA Independent School District through UIL competition. Additional incentive to enroll in NETSIS. If I have a promising athlete that I think needs to be involved in high school athletics, I have to make a choice now whether I'm going to allow this child to go in and get the education or I'm going to put them in athletics. We don't need to force people to make that choice. What we need to say to them is, you go to early college high school, you finish your degree plan with a 3.0 or better in 3 years or less, your senior year, we'll give you an opportunity to show what you can do in music or art or football or basketball or whatever. This is an incentive for graduating early with a high GPA for those people who are or athletic incline. It gives you an incentive to maintain a GPA above average at NETSIS and at UTEP, or work, you know, because that's where they're going to go. It gives expanded visibility to NETSIS in the KNTA community. And the cost for all of this is absolutely nothing. Doesn't cost KNTA Independent School District one more dime for a child to walk across the street to participate in basketball, football, or art, or music. It doesn't cost you anything. The coaches are there, the facilities are there, everything is there. And, you know, it seemed very simple to me when I started this, but I didn't understand all of the things that were involved. But the basic thing I'm asking you to do is to give young people the opportunity to go as far as their talent and their desire will take them. That's all I'm asking you to do. Or any questions?
No questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, and this policy, feel free to amend it any way you want to. That was just something to start with that we put out there. So, and I would like your support on this issue. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Searles?
I have no questions, but I have to stand with our new administrator. We have to give her a chance.
Right now. Any questions?
If I understood Mr. Joyner correctly, the other early college high schools do not participate?
Correct. They do not. The focus for all of the early colleges, again, is on academics. The opportunity is in terms of the academics and the associate's degree. And further, we have been able to create the opportunity to the university. So that is the stance for early college.
And do they, I assume they have students in similar situations?
Absolutely.
At a greater number than we have at this juncture.
Okay. Ms. Casa, any questions?
No, I have no questions.
Okay. We're going to recommend it to the board for approval of the administration's recommendation.
So, Ms. Chairman, you do want to take this to the full board for consideration? Because what we're saying, if that's the... there needs to be no change.
We don't need it
unless the committee would like the full board to take the issue up. That would be your decision.
Well, we don't need any changes.
No. An individual board member could request it to be on the agenda, if the committee didn't want to make that recommendation. So you really don't have to take any action at all if that be your desire.
Mr. Superintendent?
Yes.
Can Sarah speak for a second? I know you're about to wrap this up. Is it possible?
What?
Can Sarah speak for a second?
Chairman, can Sarah speak?
Yes.
Chairperson, apologize. Madam Chair.
Good evening. I'm Sarah Joyner, the person that brought all of this to you guys. Candy Tito has always meant a lot to me. I moved here. Everybody's treated me like a family, and I've always tried to reciprocate the actions. I've always put Candy Tito and Natchez ahead of what I was trying to do. I've helped with all sorts of community activities at Natchez. I edited yearbooks. I started yearbook clubs. I was the chief of robotics. I did above and beyond what other people wanted to do so far. I've been playing basketball my whole life. I'm not asking you to change the policy, but I completed all the coursework in 3 years while participating in extracurricular activities, just not with the district. I have not perfect attendance, but I have very few absences. I have a very high GPA, and I just don't understand how somebody can tell me what I'm capable of doing when they haven't even seen me achieve. Like, if you would, I understand that you are saying you don't need a change, but this isn't just about athletics or music or arts or whatever. It's about giving somebody the opportunity and to take the opportunity. That's what the early college is about. I was given the opportunity, and I decided to take advantage of that opportunity. Not knowing what was going to happen first year, senior, just hoping to go along for the ride and everything would be okay. In our early college setting, you have to take initiative. So I'm taking initiative now to bring this and present this to the board. And I would just like you to give the opportunity to me and other students. Not all students will have the same schedule that I have. But if students are willing to work as hard as I have and are willing to promote the community and promote the early college as much as I have, I think that they should have the opportunity to make their own decisions. And if we don't achieve it, I'll be the first one to tell you, you know, I love basketball, but I'm not going to put my GPA at risk. I study every day. I have microbiology, I have calculus, I have a 7:30 lab. And that's just, I took Saturday courses, I took 6:30 in the morning courses. I don't know how much more commitment you can show that you're not going to just put Natchez and Kenny T on the backboard burner. Academics is number one in my life. It always will be. But I just think that it should be an incentive for some people that, you know what, we want you to achieve something in your academic career. So you know what, you can stay in shape outside of school and you work really, really hard. We can give you something in return for making us look good. And I'm not saying, you guys gave me a wonderful opportunity, and I wouldn't trade this for the world. And I just want to thank you for that, and to just please consider this proposal. Sorry for crying. I usually don't cry in public.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so committee, we're going to leave it as is unless any other board member agrees to put it as a separate agenda item for the next board meeting.
Chairperson Gonzalez, what I could do is I could summarize this discussion in tomorrow's Friday packet to the board and simply say if there's any board member after contemplating that would like it further discussed, we could go from that point.
That's fine. Thank you. Thank you. Next agenda item, Tony.
Discussion and formulation of recommendation to the Board of Trustees regarding employee stipend and employee status change. This item will be discussed in closed session. And the time is currently 8:22 p.m. The time is now 10:24 p.m. and the meeting has reconvened into open session.
Executive session. The time is
10:24.
And the board has come to a decision, and we have formed a recommendation to make to the full board at our regular meeting before the meeting regarding letter L. And with letter M, the board has also discussed an executive session, and we have agreed on
that it'll be edited.
The paper. The resolution. We've agreed on the resolution, and it will come to the full board with additions. That's with an EDIT.
It'll be edited over the weekend and brought back. It'll be edited on Friday. And possibly over the weekend and brought back to the board on Tuesday.
Yes. To the full board. Okay. And with that, I'd like to move to adjourn.
Wait, are there any comments from the community?
Don't let them start talking. Y'all sit down.
Okay, and this brings us to adjournment.
10:24.